going to read this morning. Done. Same place, Canto 3, chapter 27. There's three verses where Devahuti speaks, 17, 18, 19. Maybe 17 through 18. And we'll look at 19 and 20. I spent some time this morning looking at the commentary by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, and it's very illuminating, so I thought I would share that this little section, Kapila Dev speaking up to verse 16. Last night we read 16. He's wonderful. Here's chapter 27. I'll just read the verses through 17, through 16. A little bit read what he writes on 16. So this is the first verse. Text 1 is an introduction to the topic. The verse that we discussed last night is kind of a summary of the topic. He's making a statement, he builds on the statement, and then makes a summary message. He titles this chapter, Kapila Describes Liberation. So I'm just going to read his rendering of the Sanskrit. The Lord said, the jiva, let's just context, all this complicated Sankhya explanation ending with the necessity of the living entity to detach oneself from the conception of belonging in the category of matter and instead the category of spirit, so that nourishment of the mood of devotion can be fulfilled. So that's like the big picture, the direction of all of this. Then he continues. Text 1. The jiva, though situated in Prakriti, is not affected by Prakriti's gunas, since it is without gunas, not the doer, and is devoid of change, like the sun's rays on the surface of water. The reflection changes, but the sun doesn't change, nor do the rays of the sun change. Nice example. When the jiva, in waking and dream state, becomes absorbed in the gunas of Prakriti, bewildered by ego, he thinks that he is the doer. Unwillingly, the joyless jiva treads the path of material birth and death by faulty action arising from association with Prakriti, receiving birth in bodies of mixed happiness and suffering. Text 4. Though actions do not actually exist for the jiva, material life does not cease because he meditates on sense objects, thinking himself a doer. It is like the experience of unreal actions in a dream. Text 5. Therefore, gradually, one should bring under control the mind, attached to the path of material objects by strong bhakti, tivra bhakti, and yoga, accompanied by disgust, viraktya cha, for material life. Text 6. With faith, one should practice using the yoga process, starting with Yama and Niyama, while hearing my glories, with the understanding that I am real. Picture's nice. This is Satya Yoga. So they do the Yama Niyama process accompanied with hearing, and we do Kirtan accompanied with hearing. 7. One should see all living beings equally, without enmity, without attachment, and should observe celibacy in silence. One should perform occupational duties as an offering to the Lord. Mahiyasa means offered to the Lord. Text 8. One should be satisfied with what comes of on its own accord, should eat with regulation, should contemplate, live in a secluded place, and should be peaceful, friendly, compassionate, and determined. Atmavan is the situated in the self, determined. Then texts 9, 10, and 11. Gets a little complicated. He should not have thoughts of I and mind for his body or relatives. By realized knowledge of... By realized knowledge of Prakriti and Purusha, he should transcend all states of consciousness such as waking and sleeping. He should see all material objects from far away. The Jnani should realize the Paramatma by the pure Jiva alone and attain that Lord, seeing him like an ocean of light by the healthy eye, the object of realization. For the liberated souls, Paramatma constantly remains in the temporary material world as the Antaryami. He is the cause of Prakriti. He is the revealer of Prakriti's evolutes, the products of Prakriti, the material elements. He pervades both Prakriti and its evolutes, its byproducts. And he is one alone. And in the purport he quotes verses that say, only by, like Bhagavad Gita 18:55, only by devotion can I be understood. Text 15. A reflection in water, reflected on a wall, is inferred to come from the image reflected on water, and the sun situated in the sky is inferred by its reflection on water. Similarly, the jiva, existing with the imposition of the threefold ahankara, that means, which is your favorite mode of nature, is inferred by the jiva is inferred by its reflection in the body, senses, and mind. And from this, Paramatma is inferred by the jiva purified by bhakti. Nice purport. Then 14, 15, and 16, we ended with 16 yesterday evening. He combines the three. The jiva, who remains alert, no complacency, without ego, when merging the sense objects, senses, mind, and intelligence in Prakriti by sleeping, but who, though indestructible, with the destruction of ahankara, falsely thinks that he has also been destroyed. becomes distressed, like a person who has lost his wealth. However, after careful reflection on these matters, he attains understanding of the existence of the Atma, who is the shelter of the Ahankara and the body, and is the Lord's object of favor. So that's the concluding. This is Satya Yoga process, and the destination is devotion, unalloyed devotion to the Supreme Lord, just the process of getting there. The mechanics of the process is different. We don't follow this process. The principles are principles that are important for us. So, robust purport. I'll just go through it. Again, this is... the first verse was indicating the jiva that has nothing to do with the modes of nature. I'll read it again. The jiva, though situated in Prakriti, is not affected by Prakriti's gunas, since it is without gunas, nor is the jiva the doer, nor is the jiva is undergoing change, like the sun's rays on the surface of water. Then the next verse is that's the transcendental position, and then the implication in matter is the next verse. So now is extricating that which is not part of matter from the illusory conception, the false ego's influence, to think that one is part of matter. So there's a discrimination process, a Sankhya process. We don't belong with matter. We don't belong to the modes of nature. We don't belong towards our feelings and our thoughts and the I and mind that's influenced by false ego. If you remember, in the process of, it's discussed in the previous chapter in detail, in the process of the unfolding of the elements from Pradhan, the first element is false ego, and we become enveloped in false ego before there's even a body, before there's even intelligence and mind. So everything is influenced by that false ego. It's got, you know, a tight grip. And so whatever it is that we do, you know, we're trying to be nice, pious and good and honest and religious, and it's all bound up in false ego. I'm the doer, and since I'm the doer, then the things that I do, they're mine, and all of that. And it's kind of tight. So even we take that mentality with us into the, or at least we try, within the house of bhakti. I'm gonna distribute some books, and I'm gonna make some devotees, and I'm gonna have a nice festival, and you know, the doership mentality continues, the bodily conception still continues, the false ego still continues. And the question Devahuti, let me just go to the question Devahuti asks, and then we'll come back to this. Devahuti asks, text 17, O Brahmana, her son, O Master, her son, Prakriti never gives up the Lord because of eternal attraction between them. Just as a fragrance cannot exist separate from earth, and taste cannot exist separate from water, the Lord does not exist separate from Prakriti. Sometimes fear of samsara is destroyed by considering the elements. You know, knowledge can bring detachment, but fear then returns because of not destroying samsara's cause. That's her doubt. So the way the Prabhupada said is, how can the soul get release from this condition? And then the Lord says, by energetic bhakti, that's tivra bhakti again, to me for a long time without desire for results, which purifies the heart and is performed according to one's occupational duties, by knowledge, with realization of the elements, by strong renunciation, by yoga accompanied by austerities, by intense concentration on the Lord, the subtle body of the jiva burns continually and gradually disappears, like the kindling stick is consumed by fire. So this, you know, the mind, as we know from Bhagavad Gita, it's the role of the mind in any system of yoga is very important. Meditation, karma yoga, dhyana yoga, sankhya yoga, bhakti yoga. What the mind does is essential. So the difficulty that's being presented by Devahuti is, you know, the affinity for matter is persistent. Our fruitive tendency is a stain. And that tendency resides in the mind. You know, the conception of, by influence of false ego, I'm entitled to enjoy. I mean, that's the program. Not Krishna's the enjoyer. It's all, you know, the material paradigm, it's all about me. You know, Krishna may be in the picture, but it's really all about me. You know, how am I enjoying? Like that bumper sticker, are we having fun yet? And Kapila Dev's reply is, it's bhakti. And bhakti, through following, from through sadhana done properly, with the kinds of discrimination and tivra bhakti, the mind not only gradually becomes purified, and gradually its grip of fruitive intention upon us subsides, which has otherwise a tendency to come back again because we become complacent. Bhakti can properly performed continuously, the material mind dissolves. There's still contemplations. That, you know, the mind is thinking, feeling, willing. There's a spiritual thinking, feeling, and willing. There's a spiritual body. There's a spiritual mind, spiritual intelligence. But the material aspect, you know, the contamination aspect of seeing separate from Krishna subsides through the bhakti process, the linking with the supreme process. Not sufficient just by gyan, not sufficient just by dhyan, not sufficient just by detached work offered to the supreme. It's bhakti. So while we say it's some appreciation of the importance of the bhakti process, while we say in Satya Yuga the process is meditation, it's, you know, we must always remember it's meditation in the mood of devotion. Something like that description in Nectar Devotion of the Brahmana who was very elderly and was unable to continue through bodily limitation in worshipping his deity to his heart's content, and so he did within his mind. And you know the whole description. He would go out through the forest and gather the ingredients and you know, bathe his deity and dress his deity and cook for his deity, make offerings to the deity and manasa puja. And then when he stuck his thumb in the sweet rice to see if it was ready yet, his thumb burned. And then his meditation broke and he saw his thumb was burned. So the Lord was accepting that offering. He was literally engaged in deity worship. Now, we don't have the qualification, and if we do have the physical capacity, we don't just do manasa puja, like manasa mangalarti or something, manasa japa. we perform our activities. And, you know, in the earlier verses, you know, the occupational duties and, you know, duties prescribed for us according to our psychophysical nature. You do those things. Joined with this, all this, this other very nice message. So, again, Devahuti's doubt is twofold. The living entity's propensity to enjoy is, it doesn't go away. And then Prakriti has a relationship with the Supreme Lord under whom Prakriti works in such a way that they're inseparable, energy and energetic, like the fragrance of a flower, or that you cannot separate taste from water. So you can't separate Prakriti from the Lord. So how is living entity going to get freed? And so the answer is similar to what you said very in the very beginning of all this. It's your Maya that's covered me. Please remove your Maya. And then I'm not covered anymore. So the Lord removes the covering when the Lord sees Tivra Bhakti sustained over time. You know, the living entity actually desires a relationship with Krishna. I heard a lecture when Prabhupada very clearly, vividly, graphically described when we approach Krishna and say, oh, please engage me in your service. We're chanting Hare Krishna. Please engage me in your service. Krishna wants to see our sincerity. Do you really want? Are you sure you want? What if there's some difficulty? Do you still want my association, or just want the difficulty removed? And when the devotee says, no, the difficulty is okay, I just want you, I want my relationship with you, oh, they're actually sincere. Well, what if some sense gratification, Prabhupada is going on like this, a little sense gratification, you sure you want me? No, I don't want sense gratification. I want you. The devotee is very sincere. Let me give myself to them. And then Mayam cha tadapashayam. The Maya is under his influence. That's, you know, her question is, how is it going to happen? Because there's this inseparable relationship between Prakriti, which the living entity isn't, and the Supreme Lord. So he can withdraw Prakriti. He can withdraw that influence. And this is an essential, really essential message of Vyasadeva's teachings overall, the Bhagavatam's teaching overall, which is that Shakti Vistarani is what our acharyas have described, what is Vyasadeva's teaching, the Bhagavatam's teaching, is transformation of energy. For example, here's two examples. Yogamaya becomes Mahamaya, or Durga. And the Durga can act like Yogamaya. And what's the variable? Like our discussion, how the living entity regards Krishna. I like your question. I mean, I'm thinking about your question. More, even besides our discussion here. It's a nice question. So knowing that the living entity has regard X, Krishna, the supreme controller who has control over Prakriti, makes system X for regard X. And then someone has regard Y, and he has a system. The system comes from the Lord, but it's in reciprocation with the living entity's regard for him. And, you know, we can be in this world and the Prakriti acts like Yogamaya. Or we can be in this world and Prakriti acts like this influence of delusion. And it's not like, let me get rid of this delusion, I want happiness. you know, it's our regard for Krishna. That's the variable. And it's hard to have regard for Krishna when there's this fruitive tendency thing. The influence of Maya has the living entity, has a whammy. And she doesn't let go. You know, try to get out of prison. Try to get out of Durga's prison. Forget it. Keep trying. No. So, you know, liberation, aspiration? No. Trying to be the enjoyer in the prison house? That's dumb. It's not a place of enjoyment. So what's a nice, respectable, good person to do? Come take shelter of Krishna and devotion. Well, that's not easy because I have this tendency to be an enjoyer. And even if I, like, by discrimination, put it in check, it comes back again. It's sustained. It just, like, keeps happening and happening. So that's her question. And then he gives his answer. Yep. Just sustained bhakti with these nice conditions. Now I want to read from his Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's purport. It's a little, the going's a little tough, but it's not so bad. Those 14, 15, 16, last night, you know, we anyway, so he raises a question. He does this Purva Paksha thing. So a doubting person may raise the following question. So he doesn't bother to say Purva Paksha says. He just puts it in quotes. Here's the Purva Paksha. Doubt. As the sun is perceived by the eye, parentheses, which is a form of the sun, Paramatma is realized by the Atma, who is Agyani endowed with some bhakti, because you can't realize Paramatma without some bhakti. That we know well. Doubt. But show me the jiva separate from the threefold ahankar directly, just as I can see the eye and the ear. And you have to get used to Vishwanath's way of saying things, like any of our acharyas. They each have their own style of expressing themselves. Unquote. The answer is given in three verses. He who is without ahankara, in the body, mind, and senses, when merged by sleep in pradhan, so-called because it is unmanifested, realizes the jiva. Doubt. Well, though one achieves destruction of the mind, intelligence, and senses by yoga practice, it's amazing that sleep alone can bring about the result of realizing Atma. Answer. When ahankara and the results of ahankara, dash, the sense objects, senses, mind, and intelligence, that is, you know, this is goes back to the previous chapter, Sankhya, the unfolding of the elements. First, one, false ego. And the modes of nature get activated. So then false ego mixes with this mode, that mode, the other mode, and you get all the other ones. So they're the byproducts of false ego. When ahankara and the results of ahankara, all those things, are destroyed by merging them into prakriti, the jiva drashta, that's the seer, so that, you know, the seat of consciousness, still isn't merged into prakriti. He's still existing as the seer, the seat of consciousness, thinking that these things have been destroyed, since he cannot see them, falsely thinks that he has also been destroyed. The ignorant sleeping jiva is then compared to a person who has lost his wealth. However, the person does not lose his attachment to lost wealth. You know, I merge into this place, you remember from First Canto when Dhritarashtra quits home and he goes to the forest and Vidura goes with him and Gandhari goes with him, and what does he do? He does this withdrawing thing. Amalgamates this into that, into that, into that. It's a yoga process. Or Bhishma Dev does the same thing. Chapter 9. So it's a process. This is those two examples, that's Dwarpa Yuga. This is Satya Yuga. And they know the process. You know, the subtle folds into the subtle, folds into the grosser, folds into the more subtle. And there they are, yogi, sitting in this yogic trance, and they're not disturbed by the prompts of those things. And then it's like, yay, I'm liberated. But then they feel the loss, like one who's lost his wealth. He does not lose his attachment. And therefore, he grieves. Paragraph. The meaning is this. With absolute destruction of the elements which create the covering of the jiva, the covering on the jiva by yoga practice, or through yoga practice you can dissolve these things, the jiva become blissful in his own form. Oops. This is not like the temporary condition of deep sleep or universal devastation. So it's a different kind of consciousness through the yogic process than, you know, the cycles of time that do things with us. When a treasure is lost, there can be no bliss in such poverty, but there can be happiness if the person loses his attraction for wealth. Similarly, even though one may destroy material coverings by deep sleep or universal devastation, without the jiva's detachment from enjoyment, one cannot attain one's swarup. That means our spiritual form. Without bhakti and jnana, one cannot attain detachment. Thus, because of the presence of material impressions, that's like the subtle stuff, and ignorance, even during sleep, the realization of Atma is insignificant. Last paragraph. Doubt. But in deep sleep, one is not aware of anything at all. Unquote. Response to that doubt. That is not so. One may say, quote, I slept happily. I was not aware of anything. Unquote. However, without knowledge of particulars, without recollection of one's Atma, that statement could not even be uttered. How do you know you slept happily? That is expressed in verse 16. Moreover, the jiva is the shelter. Ashvatanam, avastanam. The jiva is the shelter of the body, which is a combination of elements and senses with ahankara. After taking shelter of the jiva, the hankara, body, senses, mind, and intelligence begin to enjoy the sense objects. The jiva is favored by the Lord because he is given the quality of being an enjoyer, like the Lord. End of purport. Vishwanath, that's amazing. So let's go back. At the end of chapter 26, the Sankhya section, there's this recommendation by Kapila Dev to Devahuti. that says, therefore, through devotion, detachment, and advancement in spiritual knowledge, acquired through concentrated devotional service, one should contemplate that supersoul as present in this very body, although simultaneously apart from it. So now he's describing the process, and the actual fact of the soul not being implicated in matter, the mistake of thinking of oneself as implicated in matter through the agency of false ego, and addressing that situation by these different elements, knowledge, devotion, detachment. Contemplating the Supreme Lord. Devahuti's doubt. But how's it? Here's Prabhupada's translation. My dear Brahmana, does material nature ever give release to the spirit soul? Since one is attracted to the other eternally, how is their separation possible? Now, it may seem like the living entity is attracted to Prakriti, which is true, but Prakriti is attracted to the Supreme Lord, just doing the Lord's bidding. She's attracted to the Supreme Lord. She's just in his service. Maya Jakshina Prakriti. So unless the Lord gives the message, okay, Prakriti, leave them alone. Anything that we do mechanically is not sufficient. We need descending mercy. And what's going to invoke that descending mercy? The living entity exhibiting to the Supreme Lord, I really want to be with you again in loving service. Our relationship of eternal, you're the master, I'm the servant. Something like what Prahlad Maharaj, same message, when he offers his prayers to Lord Srinadeva, he's saying, please don't ask me to ask for a benediction. And he gives different reasons why, but one of them is, that's like, you know, a businessman. That relationship isn't a businessman. I've come to you and I've done something, now I want something. So please, that's not a relationship. I don't want something. Please don't ask me to take something. There's only one situation of our relationship. You're the master, I'm the servant. Period. That's our relationship. I don't want something. Please don't ask me to take something. No, there can be loving reciprocation even in such a situation where Krishna, the Lord Srinadeva says, I want to. So then you oblige what the Lord wants to. But from my side, I don't want. That's this, you know, na dhanam, na janam, na sundarim, kavitam, ba jagadisha, kamai, mama jamani, jamanishwari, bhavatad, bhakti, rahaita, gitwi. Same. I only want your service. Haituki bhakti. So is that what the Lord wants to see? Is that what you want? Are you sure? And we're not usually so sure. We do want relief from, you know, our difficulties, and we do want a little, you know, modest amount, but you know, some of our needs and wants and desires fulfilled. Please. A modest amount, you know, not too. That's kind of up and down too. Sometimes more, sometimes less. And it's on the strength of our devotion. So the strength of devotion is this pure, unalloyed devotion. The process that Kapila Dev is teaching is that. You know, this message, tivra bhakti, is repeated. Same as Languages, Canto 2. Akama, sarva kamova, moksha kama udari, tivrena bhakti yogena, yajeta purusham param. That's the Bhagavatam's teaching. And whether it's Satya-yuga and wherever the yuga, that's the teaching. Process may look different. The teaching doesn't change. They're the principle involved to come to that stage. As Lord Chaitanya is teaching through this very sublime medium of Sankirtan, of chanting of the holy name. And along with chanting of the holy name comes a life of devotion. And that means, you know, association with devotees and worshipping the deity and hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. Just as he said, you know, in that purified state, hearing my glories, with the mind fixed on Supersoul, hearing my glories. With our mind fixed upon the holy name, having chanted the holy name. Just reading, I don't even know where it's from, just yesterday, reading through a section on Bhakti Sandarbha, where Bharat, I don't know the reference, where it's from, but it's Jiva Goswami's quoting, Bharat says, O Lord, O Keshava, O Janardana, O Rishikesh, O Govinda, O Madhava, and he says nothing else all day long. That's the consciousness of the Supreme Lord, calling his name in jubilation and calling for his mercy. In that consciousness, like what Kapila Dev is describing to Devahuti, the form is different, but the essence is the same. And then the material mind dissolves. That is, you know, the Supreme Lord withdraws. It's because the contemplation, the Lord has it's been demonstrated to the Supreme Lord, one wants that relationship with him. That's all. And it doesn't mean your mind stops. Your mind becomes purified. And again, like the discussion yesterday, even the Mayavadi says, you know, the knower, the knowable, and the process of knowing become one. Well, even in that, you know, that's a conception, and there's a knower of the conception. The conscious self isn't lost. Sorry, Charlie. Nice try. But, you know, conscious self is not lost. Which is true, even in the Sayujya stage, the living entity is there. The sense of false ego and the modes of nature, like, you know, the question was asked yesterday. Deva Madhav was asking, when the living entity falls from that position of within the Brahma Jyoti and falls, that all those things are suspended, but there's still consciousness, individual consciousness, and a desire to enjoy. And until that desire to enjoy moves from the independently from Krishna type to the in the service of Krishna type, we're caught. Whether it's, you know, this place or that place. Bhakti is the it dissolves the material mind. This place that carries material conceptions and the hankering for independent enjoyment. Then it's the spiritual mind. It's when that's dissolved and withdrawn, there's what Vyasadev was experiencing, or what Kapila Dev is advising Devahuti. You want to become free from, you know, affinity for matter? Here's how. If you don't, well, you'll stay, then you'll stay. So sincere, that this message of the Bhagavatam, even if one isn't there yet, you know, in that stage of, I really want my relationship with Krishna, it's making the picture very clear. Here's the parameters of the world in which we live. Take a pick. And, you know, commonly it's, you know, it's some percentage, it's not 100%. You know, 20% and 80%. Or whatever it is. You know, it's mixed. And by hearing, the potency is there at least to move to the unmixed. That's what progress in Krishna consciousness is, towards the unmixed stage. And we have to have a picture of what the goal is. And not lament, oh, I'm not there yet. Woe is me. But rather it's to give us a picture of what the goal is so we can, from our position, strive towards the goal. From our position, acknowledge our position, see the goal, and according to prescribed means, strive for the goal. Hare Krishna. Any discussion on the verse or the subject matter?
It's like, at one end, if you look at it, the mind and senses are contaminating the consciousness. On the other end, the soul is pure and pristine in its own self. Why it's not like really reacting or counteracting, even though it can do it, to purify the consciousness? I mean, how this system really works?
We're limited. The prakriti, the contamination upon consciousness, is under the Lord's direction. We can't, okay, see you later, contamination, get out. We can't. It's not under our jurisdiction.
Actually,
that's how the system works.
The position of the soul is actually to serve the Supreme Lord.
Yeah, yes.
So in that case, like, it knows what it is, what its job is supposed to
be. Well, intrinsically, yes, but that gets covered.
Covered by the material consciousness?
And the covering of material consciousness is due to our favorite activity, misuse of free will. Which we're doing, it's not just once upon a time we misused free will, and then we fell. Now, I don't want to go into that whole thing, but moment to moment we're misusing free will. This very moment. Now there's a mix, not fully, but mixed. The misuse of free will is operative, because free will is operative. So she wants to know how to go back to the position of full, proper use of free will, and there's a process. We have to pay the price for our stupidity. And, you know, it's cleansing. But your question was, how does the process really work? That prakriti is awarded to the living entity because of the misuse of free will program and the ongoing misuse of free will program. Even when we say, whoa, I don't like it, I want out of here. There's still the misuse of free will, like that's what's being described. So, go ahead, ask your next question.
When we really try to understand the 100% knowledge about the soul, like our own self, in that case, is there any opportunity like we can eradicate the contamination of the consciousness?
Only Prabhupada's phrase. God-realization and self-realization occur simultaneously. It will not happen 100% just by trying to understand the nature of the soul. There must be understanding the Supreme, because in fact the soul is part and parcel of the Supreme. It's not complete understanding if I don't have that clear conception. And how do I get that clear conception? Through bhakti. It's not possible otherwise.
So the soul does not know that its concentration position is actually to serve?
It's forgetful of that. It's dormant.
Yeah, that's why I'm asking. I mean, when we understand that that self-realization, I mean, then we understand, okay, our job is actually to serve, then we have to identify, who's our master,
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. But it's dormant now. This whole other program is ruling and running our lives. That one, dormant. I'm the enjoyer. I get beat down. Well, I just didn't do it smart. So I'm going to do it smart. We do all these adjustments endlessly. And then comes, the liberation idea. Let me just become one with Brahman. We discussed that yesterday, or we read about it. We didn't so much discuss it. It's just, it's born of frustration. It's still not taking shelter of the position of being the eternal servant of the Supreme. So it's another selfishness. Or, you know, this last snare of Maya idea. It's another Maya. Something else? Yes?
Maya, you were saying like we need to be satisfied with whatever we have. But I was just like thinking that, but having hearing also, we have to strive in the devotional life. For if example of chanting, we have to strive. Or we have to have more eager to serve and all this. So satisfaction, but whatever we have, I'm just like a little bit.
That's on the material side. You know, the striving is a hankering to be more intimately united with Krishna in our relationship with Him. And that's not exactly a dissatisfaction, it's an inspiration. I mean, it's in a category altogether different from material hankering. It's the nature of the soul. That hankering is good. Let me chant better.
But sometimes it just feels like both are so mixed up.
Well, that's because we're mixed up. Our conceptions are not... we're not mature in our evolution of devotion yet. And therefore it seems to be mixed up. You know, the distinction between spiritual desire and material desire, the distinction between them is not so vivid when we're not mature. You know, for example, utsaha mayi, that this, I've learned all my lessons and I'm a neophyte. I know some people like that. And they're proud. Like really proud. And it's shocking. Anyway, utsaham. So not proper discrimination, not being able to properly evaluate myself, not being able to, so that's okay. It just in course of, we continue with the process and those distinctions become more clear. Where to invest our consciousness, where to withdraw our consciousness. As bhakti evolves and matures. So that the main factor is our sincerity. While our discrimination may not be evolved, the main consideration is our sincerity. I mean, just like your son. So sometimes and sometimes. So as parents, we are concerned about, of course, giving the right resources for our son to grow, but, you know, are his, what are the intentions? Is he clear about his values and what's important? And as he goes along, he'll, you know, he'll understand these things, which as a younger, less matured person, you know, doesn't fully understand yet. Like that. So saying Krishna is regarding us, and that's how we should regard our inability to have the proper discrimination. It'll come. Just continue with the reading process and the chanting, hearing and chanting process. Nourishing our bhakti, it'll come. And take guidance. Someone else? Yes?
This topic of false ego and identification, and today's description of Prakriti and the relationship of Prakriti with Krishna, and the whole thing was coming like conceptually we can understand we are the spirit, soul, and servant of Krishna, but that's very covered in this.
Yes.
So for our state, as an application of this principle, is bringing the consciousness to the level of actions, like. Because the fruitive mentality is the one that's holding us with
yes.
False ego. So the more we work on the consciousness of our actions being
for Krishna,
to Supreme and Krishna. So what? That brings the purification.
Yes, that's the bhakti principle. For Krishna, for the pleasure of Krishna, my relationship with Krishna. And although, you know, I'm that seed is just barely, you know, it's barely sprouting. Nurture that one. And that when that grows, that, you know, that's the action that's needed. It's the consciousness behind the activity, not just the behavior. It's the consciousness behind it. Cultivate that. And then, you know, all the needed discrimination and realization and everything flows from that. The detachment, the attachment to Krishna, seeing Krishna within all things, feeling compassionate towards others, even those who are trying to harm us, feeling compassion, feeling, you know, the right feelings on the platform of the soul. You have something? Yeah.
I have two questions. One, you mentioned that in different ages, bhakti was the process. However, it was performed in a different way, like in the other ages, Yama Niyama, in this age, it's Kirtan. So, when we say that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has opened the storehouse of the pure love of Godhead, so what do we mean there? That what is this so special about Mahaprabhu giving the Premanam, whereas the bhakti present previously also?
That could be answered in a number of ways, but one nice way is he was distributing Vrajaprem. And this process doesn't take one to Vrajaprem. What's your next question?
My next question is that we were chanting, at that time, sometimes I ponder, do I really want to serve Krishna? But upon contemplating, I found that I really do not want. Just thinking itself, I don't want. Like, otherwise, I would be asking sincerely for it. So, like from moment to moment, it's difficult to focus. Like I can focus for like a minute or two in the contemplation, and then it just again goes.
Yeah.
And I feel like 10 minutes again, woke up again. I'm chanting, but I'm doing anything. So, what is the
purification? The same as what he says. I mean, it's very nice, but, you know, sustained Tivra Bhakti. Is it, you know, this going back, it's the mind. The mind that's born of false ego. False ego in contact with the mode of goodness, but, you know, the mode of passion also has an influence. Anyway, so the material conceptions and the fruitive disposition carries us back again, the bungee cord. So how to sustain it is same answer as I gave at Krishna House. There's no substitute for purity. We have to pay the price for purity, that is to say the long, incalculably long duration of pursuing happiness through fruitive activities. We have a price to pay. We've gotten, you know, super contaminated. Yucky. Stinky. Foul. And so, you know, the result isn't going to come quickly because of that. So we just, with faith and with sincerity, just continue. And, you know, the point that you made is similar to, you know, it's the devotion behind the activity. And, you know, do this for Krishna. It's right in the language of what Kapila Dev says also. You know, the worldly duties are to be done in devotion for the Supreme. And that's part of, and how can you do that unless the sadhana is done properly? Lest the heart becomes cleansed. Chaito Dharpana Marjana. And, you know, we're distracted when we're chanting, so the cleansing is, you know, whatever, less than 100%. Although the potency is there 100%, our attention is elsewhere because of this contamination. We're thinking of other things that are important to us or more important to us, although they're not. We're carrying material conceptions. The contamination is like very deep. We just keep scrubbing. in devotion, waiting for the, you know, calling for mercy. O Keshava, O Janardana, O Rishikesh, O Govinda, O Madhava. Yes?
Been hearing so much about sincerity. Can you just explain what it means to be sincere and how to become sincere?
Okay. It's a standard question. And often when asked this question, I answer the same way that I heard Prabhupada answer. That Prabhupada said everyone knows what sincere means. We also know what insincere means. You know, someone that's duplicitous. Someone that says, gee, Prabhu, I'm sorry. And they just do it again. You know, we know the difference between sincere. Just duplicity. The external only, not something internal. Like the discussion yesterday about from the heart. So when something has touched the heart, you can feel that when it touches your heart. And when it's someone else's heart is touched, you can feel that. When someone's singing in kirtan, and it's just like it's show-off time, or it's, you know, it feels different than when someone is just calling from their heart. So, you know, we have it, you can feel it. So we know the difference. And how do we get that? You know, it's by association with those that are sincere. Prabhupada's answer to that question, how do you, you've been emphasizing sincerity, how does one become sincere? Prabhupada's answer, how does one become a drunkard? By association. How does one become a scholar? By association. How does one become sincere? By association. We can say, you know, by association with Srila Prabhupada, you know, what the standard of sincerity really is became, you know, at least the opportunity to understand it is there. You associate with someone that's genuine, then you can understand what's genuine. And otherwise, something else may be accepted as the standard. Someone that cries. Or something. Sincere is there's consistency. And circumstances may cause, you know, differences, but still there's consistency in that sincerity. It's not now you see it, now you don't. The sincerity is always sincerity is spiritual. It's always there. Even when one is down, even when one is up, even when one is in between down and up, it's always there. And associate with such people and that quality comes. It's actually natural for the soul, and to associate with those who are so qualified, that quality comes out. Fire comes out by association with fire. When fire is stored, the capacity for that is there, so through association. And the process of purification. If we hear with an open heart, then that stirs something. And when that something is stirred, you know, I wish to be in that the association of that sound vibration or the association of that message. I wish to be there. I wish to like that. So the awakening of sincerity comes through sound. That's from that sincerity place or connected with Krishna in devotion place. Last question, we're going to end.
This is regarding deity worship.
Okay.
We were told that when we are out of town, we can attend to deities mentally. So, is that...
It depends on how far, how long you're out of town. if you're going, you know, for some duration of time, a good idea is someone who you know will care for the deities nicely, have them care for your deities if they, you know, can, are able and willing to do that. That, you know, in other words, the thought is genuinely the satisfaction of the deity. So if it's as a householder with deities in one's home, if one is away for a short time, this can be done. Take a picture, and you worship the picture, and make offerings to the picture, and that way you're worshiping your deity. Can be done. The other is longer duration, more recommended. You still, as you travel, you can take your picture and make your offerings to your picture of your deity. But someone is actually, you know, whatever, bathing, dressing, and whatever offering. I'm going to end. Thank you very much, Prabhupada Ki. Yeah.